Okay, an hour to go of your phone calls with our special guest, Hugh Newman, author of the book Earth Grids, and we'll be back with your calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Hugh, I have to keep coming back to crop formations. Do they hold any answers here to these mysteries?
I think they hold a remarkable amount of knowledge within them. And I mean, to be honest with you, it's one of the reasons I personally got into this whole megalithic and esoteric subject, really. The more you look into them, you find them, oh, they're amazing, they're paranormal. ETs made them to start with. But then you start exploring them, studying them. You start realizing the landscape, the ancient sites connected with them, the ley lines, the earth energies. You go into the sacred geometry. You realize there's mathematical codes and possibly messages within them. And then you realize there's possibly calendar dates in them. That's just something that Jeff Stray and others have looked at. And then you realize, you know, are they actually connected with one crop circle to another? Do they sort of lead on to one another, like stringing a sentence together over a whole summer or over several years? And so I find the more you look into them and the more you look at it from the universal language perspective, i.e. mathematics and geometry, you start uncovering certain things in them, which is it's quite fascinating. And remarkably, they're very similar to, you know, the same kind of math and geometry you get in the ancient sites, in the pyramids, Stonehenge, and other stone circles, and other places around the world. And so I find the connection there remarkable. And now crop circles are appearing in North America, all over Europe, different parts of the world. But for some reason, the hub of them, the high majority of them, seem to still appear in Wiltshire and around Avebury and around Stonehenge, which are two of the most impressive stone circles on the planet. So I find that quite fascinating in itself, why they all seem to congregate there. Why is that? And this is one of the sort of mysteries which is sort of, you know, it kind of sort of baffles me constantly. It could be because there's the most stone circles there are than anywhere else on the planet congregated around that particular area. It could be because the energies are particularly potent there. It could be because the sites themselves have encoded knowledge in them and they're now coming out of the stone somehow and actually spreading out through the landscape. So there's lots of things to consider here. And I find it, you know, the more you look into it, the sort of the deeper you have to go with it. And it's almost like a daemonic reality where the further you look into it, it kind of jumps to another level of complexity or sophistication, which you then have to study from scratch again.
Why does it seem these crop formations appear in England more than any other spot? They're all over the planet, but in England, they're everywhere.
Yeah, they do. I mean, they particularly appear just in the sort of Wiltshire, the Wessex kind of area. No one has got an answer to that, to be honest with you. But they do appear all over Britain in different parts, in East Anglia, in other places, and different parts around the world. There have been some in Europe and North America, particularly sort of the ones that interest me, because they're usually linked to the mound culture, the sites along, you know, the Mississippi mound culture region all the way down to the center part of America. So more and more are appearing, and this fascinating, superb designs you get Italy and places like that as well. So, yeah, why they happen in England mostly, it's a mystery, but there's something to be said about the ancient megalithic sites here and how the power that they seem to hold over the landscape.
All right, we're going to take phone calls now with Hugh Newman. Hugh, by the way, the book Earth Grids, where do you get it?
You can get it on the Megalithomania website, megalithomania.co.uk/HughNewman.html. You can get it direct, signed copies. You can get it on Amazon in America, but often they don't have it in stock. It's best to get it direct from the website, and then we send it out personally, signed and everything. So
I got to tell you, with borders in this country closing a third of its stores soon, Amazon.com is going to take off like a rocket ship with these books.
Yeah, okay.
All right, let's go to the phones. Bob is in Orlando, Florida, and you'll get us started here. Hi, Bob.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I wanted to know, has you been to Florida lately?
Have you been to Florida?
I've not been to Florida, no, but I really want to go because Coral Castle's there, and there's some interesting stuff in the Everglades, and there's some other ancient sites that have sort of been built over I'm interested in.
We also have some Cutstone Road down here that no one's talked about yet.
Oh, okay, that's interesting.
Tell me about that, Bob.
Well, I discovered it about 20 years ago. I thought it was a boat ramp in the middle of the Suwannee River. And it goes across the bottom of the river and into the riverbank. I don't have a digging team to dig it out to figure out how far it goes.
What's your guess? How long is it?
Oh, gosh. I can't determine. I mean, I think it's older than the Miami Circle.
Wow.
Oh, really?
And there's some Cutstone Road in Kentucky that someone found, and as a paleontologist was digging up a tar pit, decided to dig a little bit deeper, and he found himself a section of Cutstone Road. No idea where it goes and no idea how it got there, and it was older than the tar pit.
That's incredible. You got to get us some pictures on that, Bob, can you?
I don't know about the tar pit piece. I can get you some pictures on the one for Suwannee. I had to go diving to get them. By the way, there's a city in the Caribbean, a sunken city about 2,500 feet down on the bottom of the ocean down there in the middle of the Caribbean.
Is this the Bimini Road you're talking about, that kind of area?
Yeah, that area, but it actually leads to an actual city that the Navy took pictures of. I've seen the photographs.
What's the city look like?
It's crossed between Aztec and something else, but I'm not sure what.
So it's pretty ancient, then.
Yes, it is very ancient. There's a road that goes across the bottom of the ocean that no one's talked about either. It goes from Caribbean to the Mediterranean, or goes to the Spanish coast.
Then it's got to be Atlantis.
Yeah. I was also, and I talked to this about Art Bell about 10 years ago, and he hadn't heard of it until all of a sudden about 5 years ago it popped up. There's a city underneath the ice in Antarctica.
I heard rumors about that.
They were x-raying the ice. They found it. They started cutting into it with lasers to cut the ice. It's deep down. Deep down, you know, it's on the continent itself, obviously. But
the whole landmass sank, didn't it?
Yeah.
Jeez, just a matter of time. All right, thanks, Bob. Good. Those are fascinating stories, Hugh.
I mean, regarding Antarctica, I mean, this is something that Charles Hapgood and then later Rand Flemmat looked at, and they're convinced that that's actually possibly the site of Atlantis. And it kind of fits in with all the stories of Atlantis being out in the great ocean, past the Pillars of Hercules, etc. And because it's under ice and no one's been able to get through it, well, it sounds like they have now, then perhaps that is where it's at. And you look at the Piri's Res map, which, you know, several hundred years old, they actually had the whole of the landmass and the coast mapped on that. And so it must have been free of ice, you know, the last few thousand years. And actually, it was known about in prehistory before, as these maps were being made. So, yeah, I'd be very interested in any developments on that.
Well, it was probably pretty tropical a long time ago.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and also the ones off of Florida as well fascinate me, because that's one of the major grid points as well on the planet. So I'd be very interested in any more research on that, because, again, that's another case for Atlantis there. Which is definitely worth looking at, and I'd love to see these photos the Navy took, for sure.
Let's go to Grants, New Mexico, west of the Rockies. It's James Turn on Coast to Coast. Hey, James.
Hey, George. First-time caller, long-time listener.
Thank you.
I'm a pilot, and I wondered if your guest had any information on the lines that are visible in New Mexico from the air. These lines are carved into the surface of the earth, obviously long before today's present geology. If you fly these lines, they break up where canyons and mountains now are, but they continue on when you fly beyond them. And they're visible because they're filled with vegetation, because they were carved into the surface at some time. And I've never been able to find any information about it. In fact, the only people I ever have talked to are other pilots that have noticed them, and I've never heard anybody else mention it.
Huh, I have not. And how about you, Hugh?
Whereabouts in New Mexico do you mean exactly?
Well, they're visible in various parts of the state. The first ones I noticed were in the eastern half of the state, over by White Sands. Now, understand that the geology here is very dry. It's high desert. so there's not a lot of vegetation. So when something is carved in, it fills with vegetation, and that's what makes the lines noticeable. And they're true north-oriented, north to south, and they're evenly spaced approximately a mile apart from each other. But they run forever. I mean, you can follow them. They disappear where there's canyons and mountains that obviously occurred after these lines were put in, so they're very ancient. And someone did it. Some intelligence put them there, and I have no idea for what, or never been able to find anything about them.
A roadmap to something.
it's fascinating because I know Chaco Canyon. When you go, spokes of lines come out from there.
Yeah, that's one of the areas.
So whether that's connected or not is very interesting. And also, obviously, there's the whole Nazca thing in South America.
In Peru.
But yeah, I've heard about this before. There's a guy called Paul Devereaux who's done some research on what he calls spirit roads or spirit paths. And he's done some research on New Mexico. I haven't got the information in front of me right now, but I believe he's probably got some research on some of the stuff you're talking about. And if you could forward any stuff to me or to George, that'd be great to have a look at it, and we can maybe analyze it and let you know what we think about it.
Absolutely. Like, next up, we go to Michael in Norfolk, Virginia. Hey, Michael, go ahead.
Hi. When you had Zahi Hawass on the last time was late November of 2008.
No, I had him even later than that, believe it or not.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
You did?
I had him sometime last year.
Oh, I missed that show, and I very seldom miss a show. Well, since we have Mr. Newman here with us, George, you have been steadily moving Egyptology forward, but most of it has been done in secrecy because it has had to be done in secrecy. In other words, you're bringing on guests, they're bringing out little pieces. People like Glenn Kimball knows he can only say so much. So
the late, by the way, he just passed away.
Yeah, the late Glenn Kimball. So he would say to you right after Zahi was here on the show, he would say to you, well, you know, I'd kick over a little bit of dust and there'd be pottery there. And I'd kick over a little more and there'd be pottery. Well, these little clues are what have to be done for the very reason, and Mr. Newman, I want to get your response to this, for the very reason that Zahi Hawass told you when you asked him, is there interest in archaeology, the pyramids and all this, inside Egypt? He said no.
He said no.
He said he can't get people enthusiastic about this. Now, this is a part of the mystery. This is why people who come there and who want to continue visiting in Egypt have to talk in circles, talk in clues, but it's going to end tonight. The white powder that Carmen Bolter talked about, seeing in the pyramid, has been talked about since Napoleon talked about it and before that, when he visited there. Now, when Rob Simone had a guest talking about the pyramid in Bosnia, he talked about a mysterious white powder. If you go to the Mayan pyramids, you will see traces of a mysterious white powder.
The late Lawrence Gardner talked about that.
Exactly. We have analyzed that powder. Carmen Bolter believed that it was otherworldly, that it was out of this world. But why should a mystery remain a mystery all these centuries when it's there, anybody can pick it up, scoop it up, put it in their pocket, take it out, and get it analyzed? Why should that happen? And why should people keep talking about it as a mystery when all they have to do is do that? I'll tell you why. We've analyzed it. We know what it is. It's in Illinois. It's in Iowa. It's in the grain silos. It's grain dust. We know what it is. The mystery is solved.
Well, there you go.
Okay. I mean, there is a connection there. I mean, some of the analysis which George just mentioned is that in some places, in some of these pyramid sites and temples, they found this white powdered gold, which is the monatomic element.
Right.
Cerebit al-Kadim in the Sinai in Egypt. I visited there myself recently and had a good look at the Hathor temple there. And apparently that's where they used to make this white powder gold. And they found loads of this white powder back in the 1920s when William Flinders Petrie was there, who was one of the sort of key Egypt archaeologists, one of the pioneers. And so, yeah, I mean, I get the sense that there's something to do with grains as well, like you say, that placing grains at these sites charges them up. And I think the pyramids were partly one of the reasons they were designed for that. And you mentioned Bosnia as well and the pyramids there. I mean, that's a whole other world of research. And Semir Samoz-Manegic, who made all the discoveries there, has got all the first-hand research. And it's really worth, you know, getting in touch with him about that. He's actually coming over to England to Megalithomania in the middle of May this year. And please join us, because we're actually doing a tour over there with him in early September. So, you know, Megalithomania tour. So it'd be great to have people like yourself who are fascinated by these sites joining us, because sort of to question Semir and question the archaeologists. And there's a lot of people, international consortium, coming to Bosnia at that time, having a conference there, which we can discuss these aspects and, you know, different parts of the world. So I really appreciate what you said.
Tell us about this megalithic picture you sent us. This huge...
the one in Britain.
Yeah, the one in Brittany.
That is fascinating. That I can't remember exactly where that is, because there's so many in Brittany.
It's huge. Incredible.
It's huge. Tell me about it. I mean, that was one of it blew me away. I mean, I'm not tiny or anything. That is actually that big.
Is that is that little old you standing next to it?
Little me there, yeah. And yeah, the more if you go to Brittany, I mean, like, everything is about twice the size there as it is anywhere else in the world. And this is one of the deeper mysteries, that some of the stones there are like several hundred tons. And they just sort of, as though the ancient people were playing with them. I mean, and there's a guy called Howard Crowhurst. He's done some brilliant research on Brittany. He's coming to Megalithomania in May this year as well. And I really recommend people find out about his research or tune in to Megalithomania when we have it online, live streaming and stuff like that. Because he really has cracked the whole Brittany code, all the archaeoastronomy, all the lays and the grids. And he believes there was a specific grid system they were using there. And also, if people want to join, we're going to be going there as a group. Anyone can join us. Megalithomania tour to Brittany around the time of the summer solstice in mid to late June. We're going to explore these mysteries with Howard and hopefully with Robin Heath and a few others. So it really is about, you know, this is where I'm at. I really want to get out to these sites, explore them, study them, feel the energies there. I think it's a really important aspect of that, and I think Brittany is one of the keys to this whole mystery.
The Easter Island structure, Moy, is it? It's huge.
Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah.
How did it get there?
I mean, there's stuff on Easter Island. I haven't been there yet myself, but I've looked at some of the photographs there. Not only have you got the fascinating heads that all face east, you've also got these polygonal megalithic walls, which are just like the ones you get in Peru, which are just like the ones you get in Egypt. And you even get similar ones like that in Italy and Greece and other places.
Okay, it's amazing. Hugh, let's talk a little bit more about that and then wrap things up with some final calls. Well, our next Coast to Coast program, a little bit of ghosts and a lot of open lines. It'll be a full moon night and anything goes. We'll be back in a moment with final calls with Hugh Newman on Coast to Coast AM. Hugh, is there any specific region around this planet that might have a little bit more energy, stronger grids than other areas?
I think the classic answer to that is probably Giza. I must admit that. I went to Egypt twice over the last 6 months. I got back just in the nick of time recently in January, so that was interesting. But yeah, I find that particular area very fascinating and very powerful. And you hear so much about it, you know, and you really have to go there. And I went to virtually all the sites I could in Egypt, including sites in the Sinai and really far south, etc. But there's something about the Giza Plateau and the energy there that really gets me. other sites around the world that really fascinate me. In Guatemala, there's a place called Tikal, which is very famous.
Right.
Site. I've been there twice as well now, and I had such a profound experience. The first time I went, I couldn't leave, and I stayed there for a week and set up a hammock and just didn't leave because I was so blown away by the energy there. I found that particularly powerful. And so there are a lot of power sites. I think a lot of people resonate with them for different reasons. And I think a lot of it is to do with either our ancestors or past lives and our connections with the sites on that level. I found that very strongly at Tikal in Guatemala especially. I actually met several people there when I was there in 2003, and we all knew we'd been there 1,000 years before, do you know what I mean? All four of us, and we're like, oh my goodness. And so, yeah, it depends on, you know, where you're at and, you know, and if you spend time and tune into the places. I think that's a very important side of it.
These lines that are there, were they, you know, we talked about the ancients, you know, had some incredible knowledge about this. How did it get to be so planet-wide known?
That's a good question. I mean, this is one of the sort of academic kind of struggles that's been going on for several decades. There's alternative thinkers who believe there's diffusionism, where people would sail around the world in boats, they would travel, and they would explore, and they would map the planet. And there's evidence of this when you look at the legends in, like, Mexico, for instance, of Quetzalcoatl, South America, Peru, Bolivia area with Viracocha, in Ireland with the Tuatha Dé Danann, Osiris stories in Egypt. And you find that they're all very similar stories, and they lost in antiquity of when they were, but that people were turning up, obviously from a different culture, because they were described as being pale-skinned with beards, etc., speaking different languages and things like this. And they would teach the arts of civilization and culture and megalithic construction and agriculture and all these higher qualities. And so it suggests that there was diffusionism. They were traveling around the world, spreading high knowledge, possibly surveying the planet at the same time, building and teaching the locals about megalithic sites, things like this. Whereas the other side of the coin is that, you know, that there was no travel over the seas at all. And people would walk around the planet, which would be quite insane, really, when you think how easy it is to get, you know, get in a boat and travel across the Atlantic. Something that Thor Heyerdahl, you know, did quite effectively in many different expeditions, quite famous ones, through the Pacific and through the Atlantic. So I think diffusionism and using boats and ships even was the mode of transport, unless, of course, you get into the Vimana. Aircraft sort of studies as well.
That tells you that we did have high technology.
Absolutely, yeah, I think so. Yeah, it makes sense. I think the human mind and the human capabilities have pretty much been, you know, the same. They've sort of ebbed and flowed over different epochs, the Golden Age, the sort of more darker ages. But I think the human mind is so inquisitive and so got so much time and materials are everywhere, we would just get into stuff. We would be building stuff, experimenting, traveling around the world. We want to explore, gone off places. You know, we just want to do that. It's the nature of the human. It's only today that we're kind of bogged down with 9-to-5 jobs and debts and stress that, you know, and all the world's kind of been mapped, that it's not so much like that anymore. Whereas I think in ancient times when there's less people, less of what we have today, I think it would have been much more like that, yeah.
All right, to the phones we go. Mark is in Sacramento. Hey, Mark, go ahead.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Good.
Great show. Very interesting. I had a question concerning the ley lines and the energy that they give off. I know how this is an electromagnetic universe and how we're like electromagnetic beings, and I was wondering, because lately I've been hearing a lot of talk about how there's going to be a consciousness shift in 2012 and how the vibrations is going to change. And I was just wondering, because something strange is happening to me. I know that when I close my eyes, I can feel my, I know my body's not moving, but I can feel my, like I was telling you before, I could feel my consciousness rotating. And I was just kind of wondering, What do other people see when they close their eyes, like at night, if they meditate or anything? I looked on the internet and I saw that a lot of people see all these spinning lights and, you know, little things that look like the universe spinning left and right. And I was just wondering, would that have anything to do with the upcoming storm in 2012?
That's a good question.
Many different things. Well, first of all, if you're by a ley line, does anything happen to you?
It's quite plausible. It's possible. If there's like two of them crossing, some sort of, you can get an energy kind of vortex, and this can be quite a strong effect. Or even if you're just on one line that's going through your house, that can also have either a positive or negative effect. Depends what else is happening on that ley line, because things could be happening miles away on the same line, and that energy signature could be traveling along it, and you could pick it up. And so there's these things to consider. Another aspect is the geopathic stress, which is something that geomancers and dowsers are experts at. And where there's certain types of grids or lines that cross, it can have a very negative effect. And it can actually stress the body out and put the brain into a strange state. But also there's positive things. Well, it really depends. It's the way that towns and villages and cities are constructed in modern times actually cause a lot of stress with the energies in the landscape, whereas the ancients, you know, whether it's Feng Shui in China or whether it's Western geomancy in Europe, they worked with the landscape and they understood and felt the energies. And this is something that's very sort of fundamental within us. And I believe, as I was saying earlier, the effects it has in our brain and the visions we may see when we close our eyes could be to do with being on a PowerPoint, and there could be charged energy there. So there's a number of different things that could cause an effect. But yes, there certainly are different effects that have been noted.
There you go, Mark. Let's go next to Holiday, Florida. John's turn. John, good morning.
Hello. Thanks for having me on, George.
Sure.
Hello. I have a question for Hugh based on archaeological research that I've been doing. I found 2,000 stone anchors along the west coast of Florida, and the pieces of the anchors as well. And as you map this out on the west coast of Florida, you can see that there's a 10 degrees north of east line coming off of the coast going eastward. And it appears that there was a giant fleet of ships on the west coast of Florida, size of oil tankers. And they were maybe pushed in a gigantic surf and broken apart. And in any scientific experiment, you have to be able to repeat it. And so we've seen the repeating of this 10 degrees north of east angle of these stones coming up onto the shore. And it's a big indicator that a giant tsunami must have hit Florida in ancient times and thrown these giant stone anchors onto land. So I have a theory that there's two kinds of megalithic structures, the structures that man has put on the earth himself, and then the megalithic structures that have been put on the earth by accident, such as stone circles that are all over the world, which would indicate that giant ships had survived the flood and let down at certain points around the world, leaving their stones in a semicircle or a circle, and then dismantling their ships. And, you know, thus we would have indigenous plants, animals, and people all over the world. What does Hugh think about that?
There you go, Hugh.
Well, that's actually fascinating, actually. I'm very interested in what you said. I mean, it does make a lot of sense because there's a lot of sites that look like they're man-made and possibly aren't. I mean, one of the big debates is the Yonaguni underwater structures pyramid off the coast of an island of Japan, whereas it looks like it's natural, but it's a debate whether it's man-made or not. But and you mentioned stone circles or semicircles. Can you just explain what you mean? How would that occur from a ship?
On the back of the ships in ancient times, they used to have 10 or 12 of these stones hanging around as anchors and ballast on the outsides of the ship.
Right. And they're pretty big size, weren't they?
And you can actually see this on YouTube under Johann von Sachs is my name on YouTube. And you can see how these stones have actually just been placed there after a flood rather than placed there by men moving around, as opposed to Stonehenge. These are more or less naturally placed there after a catastrophe. And it would indicate that Tarpon Springs would be the ancient Garden of Eden because it's on the west coast of Florida, halfway up and down the coast. And the Anclote River would be the Arcadian River of Greek mythology, and the Garden of Hesperides would be Tarpon Springs, Florida, because it has the underground river Alpheus and the overground river, the Arcadian River, here.
Well, yeah, I mean, it makes a lot of sense, this anchor thing, actually, because I remember Graham Hancock in his Underworld research, his Sunken Civilizations of the Ice Age, there were some what looked like underwater stone circles or semicircles, and so perhaps you could be onto something there, but I don't know how that would explain the 900 stone circles in Britain, some that are high up on hills, but certainly I think for some of them it does make a lot of sense. And I'm very interested in these anchors you've discovered. I mean, I'd love to see some photos of them and also where they are. I mean,
you can, he said you can see it on YouTube under Johann Sachs.
Oh, okay.
S-A-C-H-S.
Yeah, I definitely have to have a look at that because it's absolutely fascinating. Okay. Yeah,
you know,
thanks.
It's probably so fascinating, Hugh. What is on the bottom of the sea?
Yes.
My gosh, if we could just for one day drain all the oceans and look at all that stuff that's down there. Can you imagine what would be there? Sunken cities, ships, who knows what, planes.
Yeah.
My God.
Absolutely. I mean, I believe in Britain is a good example of that. I mean, because England used to be joined with France and other parts of Northern Europe. And so there's a whole channel there, potential. And we know that Brittany and Southern Britain, you know, there's megalithic sites strongly in both parts. There's probably amazing amount of stuff that is yet to be discovered, and I wonder if any of it's sort of anything's being preserved down there, which could give some clues as to, you know, unlocking the mysteries of these ancient civilizations.
Do we know if the planet has calamity, whether you name it, war, famine, if the crop formations show up more?
So what do you mean by that exactly?
I mean, do we have more crop formations during times of strife on this planet?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. I'd have to look into that, actually. That's, you know, if any crop circle researchers are listening, that's,
yeah, I'm just
worth,
you know, wondering, yeah, when one pops up, like the one we just had in Indonesia.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, look at what's been happening. So maybe it's like a warning. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it could be connected, like, it's like what Richard mentioned with, like, what's happening in Egypt. And, like, you know, the energy of what people are feeling and thinking and what's being spread around the internet and you know, reactions to things is actually going through the grid. It's going through the earth energies and the ley lines. And actually it manifests actually in crop circles and things like that. It wouldn't surprise me if that was part of the way the crop circles were actually created, is actually our own passionate energies and thoughts and feelings. So I would imagine there's something in that, George, yeah.
Well, let's go to Randall in Columbia, Mississippi, first-time caller. Hi, Randall.
Yes, sir. How are y'all doing tonight?
We are fine. Thanks.
Good. I noticed there's been a lot of discussion and studies on Egypt and South America,
mm-hmm.
but does your guest know of any studies that's been done on any of the ruins that were reported by soldiers during the Vietnam War? They said that they've seen ancient ruins, huge temples and stuff in Southeast Asia during the Vietnam War. I was wondering if there was any studies that had been done on them.
I don't know of any. Hugh?
No, I'm not aware of any either, but I know there would be Buddhist temples down that way for sure. But I'd be very interested. I'd be very interested in looking into that, actually.
Hugh's book, of course, is called Earth Grids, that cruise we were talking about, the Mayan cruise, if you're interested, with Jim Mars is going to be on it, Danian Brinkley, Richard Hoagland, they'll all be there. 1-866-348-4658. 866-348-4658. Richard says there's still some tickets available. It's a 7-day cruise, if you're interested in that. That's a pretty long time. Hugh, they're going to try to see if they can get you on it. So get ready for that. Let's go to John in Ontario, Canada. Get you in here real fast, John. Go ahead.
Yes, thanks for taking the call. you spoke about the grid lines, but and giving off energy. Now, you mentioned briefly that they do give off negative energy too. And on the internet, when you Google geopathic stress, if you're on a Hartman or a Curry line or even a Benker cube, they deplete your immune system. And I think this is a cause of
interesting. So opposite effect, then, huh?
That's certainly the case. Yeah, absolutely.
So I would think it would enhance your energy, Hugh.
It can do. It really depends, because it's like the whole thing with energy. It can work both ways. And if like I mentioned earlier, if the landscape or the way the building has been constructed isn't in accordance with geomancy and the landscape and the natural energies, which is what geomancers and feng shui experts that's what they do, then often you can get stress points building up. And like you mentioned, the Hartman and Curry grids is something that fascinates me, because these are very tight grids that cover the whole planet, and they kind of interact with each other. And often where they cross on the stronger lines of these grids, this is where problems can occur. And it's actually been proven over and over again that these are related to debilitating diseases if your bed is positioned in the wrong place, or and it's actually on one of these crossing points. So it's worth checking that out, either getting a geomancer in to have a look at your place. They can do it remotely as well, things like this, or just testing it out with dowsing for yourself. But often, you know, you can just intuitively tune in and work out where is the best place to place your bed, and things like this. So there's two sides to the coin. Often you could be sleeping somewhere that charges you up and it feels really good, and often it can be the opposite. So it's definitely worth getting that checked out, considering the way that houses and developments, towns are now constructed.
Absolutely. Hugh, enjoy the rest of the day, and thank you for being on the program.
Thank you, George. It's been a pleasure.
Hugh Newman, his book, again, Earth Grids. Fascinating, isn't it? How they're all over the place. And I'm convinced Edward Leeds Skolnin built his coral castle on these ley lines, and it helped him move those blocks of stone. For Dan Galante, Will Wilkerson, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy, and Punnett and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everybody.